Hello and welcome to the Digital Insight, the technology, procurement and supply chain podcast that delivers valuable C-level perspective into the core issues surrounding business transformation and digital disruption. Each episode will bring you the most inspiring executive insights from those who are leading transformation strategies within the world's biggest and best known companies. The Digital Insight, disrupt, transform, evolve.
Welcome to the Digital Insight, the official podcast series for CPO Strategy and Interface Magazines. Today, I'm joined by Pat Lyons, founder and CEO of Sullivan & Stanley. In this episode, which is part one of a two-part discussion, Pat and I explore the idea of digital transformation and how technologies force companies to rethink their operating models, particularly when it comes to the skill sets and capabilities required. Pat, welcome to the Digital Insight.
Dale, great to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Nice. It's our pleasure. So as a means for our listeners then to get a bit of an idea as to who you are and what your experience is, can you sort of sum up, you know, as best as you possibly can, your kind of career and professional background and your journey to where you find yourself today?
Okay. I'll try and give you the short story. Traditionally came from a interim recruitment background. Like many of us, finished university, came to London with lots of hopes and aspiration, and fell into IT recruitment with a big global PLC called Harvey Nash. And I kind of took it to duck to water really from day one, primarily because of my upbringing. So my parents are an Irish couple that came over to the UK back in 1977. So that's probably one of the worst times to come over to the UK as an Irish person or as Irish people. So, I grew up in quite a sort of colourful background in sort of East London, living with lots of different nationalities. And my dad was in charge of a retail branch of an Irish bank. So I kind of learned from an early age, because he used to bring me to work at the weekends and stuff, how serving a community and lending money to some of the retailers and all sorts of shops in North London and, building a community and serving that community and doing the right thing and creating value and, connecting people to problems and solutions was something that was kind of, in my DNA, if you like, from my upbringing. So when I got into IT recruitment, I very much felt I found my home. So it started off with telco recruitment. So I used to work with some of the big ISP brands in the UK when there was that internet service provider explosion. So I worked with the Easynet board to help them build their capability to try and make a mark in the UK, which of course they did quite successfully. And then Sky bought them out, and then that turned into a big integration program, which I resourced. So fundamentally at the heart of it was always speaking to boards, finding opportunities and problems, and then connecting groups of people to solve those problems, but with a recruitment sort of bent to it. And then my sort of career moved through to getting an opportunity to bring a startup into production. So it was a company called LaFosse Associates. So I was privileged to be headhunted to come over and work for a guy called Simon LaFosse. There was four of us around a table. We wanted to do something fundamentally different into the market with sort of senior knowledge workers and sort of senior recruitment. So over a sort of 6.5 year period, I grew that particular business from scratch to an 8-figure revenue business. And we did really well. And we worked with boards and we helped people like Burberry become a digital first organization, working alongside their CIO and putting in different project teams to deliver their digital programs. And I love it. That's exactly what I love doing. And I think towards the back end of that, I started to fall out of love with traditional recruitment. I think that actual model is getting disintermediated. What I was seeing in the market is what not a lot of people are talking about right now, Dale, which is this jobs revolution at the senior end of the market. So a lot of people talk about the gig economy and the sort of low end of the gig economy, but there's absolutely this explosion around this sort of expert revolution, this interim revolution of executives and senior knowledge workers leaving the permanent world to trade via their IP and value and building a service around that and becoming independent experts. So I kind of saw a few things intersecting at once, which was this interim revolution of senior knowledge workers becoming independent experts coming into the market. It was how I've always been successful in my career is serving that market. And the other thing was management consulting fatigue. So if you look at the traditional routes to getting consulting, advisory, and then delivery of big programs or big digital transformation programs, big IT programs, you'd usually go for the big four or the big 10. And I think fundamentally now what we're finding is a lot of people are starting to back off from using those channels for a number of reasons. So I kind of had this idea in my mind is, what if I brought all of the experts I've used over the years into a community-based approach to consulting and working with clients? Could it be a challenger service provider to some of the big four, the big 10, and some of the larger consulting providers? So it was really came from that spirit of uniting my network I already had into a services business to fundamentally help organizations transform. So pleased to say, we're just out of sort of year three, coming into year four. I'm not in the startup years anymore, so my gray hair attack is starting to recede a bit. We've gone from strength to strength, and we've really hit a tone in the market. So hopefully that was a short story.
No, it sounds fantastic. And, you know, you've said a few keywords in there, which we like to cover a lot and explore a lot, one being particularly sort of digital transformation and these transformation journeys. And like I've just said, we speak to a lot of people about that, and it's almost you can't open up a web page or even read anything now about business without seeing such and such is going through a digital transformation. But what I always like to sort of pick apart is this isn't a relatively new thing. Transformation didn't just happen yesterday and everyone's now catching up. It's arguable that it's been happening for a long, long time. In terms of, if you could go back to, you know, long before you started the company, when you were a little bit younger, you know, starting out, what would you say are some of the biggest changes in terms of how companies understand the idea of transformation? And I know obviously the big one's going to be technology, but, you know, what would you say to yourself, like, if you could go back in time and speak to a younger you and just sort of explain how the market is about to shift and change?
That's a great question. I wish I knew what I knew now back then. I bet you do as well. I think that my point of view on that is probably around the pace of the way that things are going to go. So when I was back then in Harvey Nash, transformation was synonymous with a multi-year big bang approach. So, you know, we would win big programs of work that, you know, they'd last between sort of 3 to 5 years, Dale. And actually, the outcome of that wouldn't necessarily change so much because the market conditions underpinning that weren't as fast and as aggressive as they are today. So I'd probably be talking to my future self, let me just rephrase that. I think the thing that we've seen in the trains of trends is that I think the way that transformation is being perceived is, you know, there's a lot of fatigue about that kind of that word these days. I mean, when I go into these big businesses, if you say the word transformation, people, you can just see the fatigue on their face or they just sigh. You know, they've been through so many different transformations. I think also the word transformation is just overused. So, you know, people might be, you know, putting the data center into a cloud, they call it transformation. Doing a desktop refresh, they're calling it a transformation. You know, I think the word transformation probably needs to be retired. But back in the sort of, you know, sort of decades of 2000 to 2010, you know, transformations were big multi-year things where benefits were derived till 3 or 4 years down the line. And I saw a lot of businesses that would spend and invest so much money in those big initiatives for it only not to work or to not deliver the intended benefits to the board, or of course be successful. And then I think when you sort of look into the decade that's come after the first decade of this century, you only need to see the gradual shift in pace. So I think it's trend one is the aggressive shift in customer preferences, the unforgiving landscape in business now. And if you look at the shift from the first decade, you'd probably say that Blockbuster and Toys R Us, if you'd have said they would be obsolete in the last decade, you'd have probably laughed. You'd have probably laughed if we said Thomas Cook would be obsolete at the end of the last decade we've just finished. And of course, the other high-profile casualty, Carillion, from a B2B perspective, so it's not just B2C, and more recently with Mothercare. So I think the trend was absolutely more long-term programs, more long-term transformation. The shift I see in the market and on the way that Sullivan and Stanley has been designed is to actually break that down into manageable chunks to keep the business invigorated and aligned and on point, where you can actually deliver the sum of a transformation every 90 days by incremental bits of value that give business benefit to the board, the customers, the internal stakeholders, etc. I think that the other shift is probably sort of talent and the changing working preferences. So again, in the sort of first decade back in my older career, there was this big thing to build huge permanent workforces. I don't get that anymore. I just don't get why you want to own your talent. Is the word permanent, should that be retired? You know, what does permanent actually mean? I think the newer generation coming through, they don't want to be permanent. Millennials don't want to be permanent. The generation after that are now starting to want to become executive gigsters or, you know, expert gigsters, where they want to have a fractional relationship with their work. They want to do gigs and fluid gigs and go into organizations and not get caught up with the, you know, company political drag and just trade value and do the stuff that they love. So they're starting to design work around what they love doing. And then more importantly, baby boomers are now just realizing that I don't want to retire. You know, I actually want to keep working. So I've still got purpose. I can keep healthy, keep my mind sharp. And I think this changing workforce, this changing opportunity, this changing landscape that's going around from the industrial way of working to the future of work is really going to accelerate this decade. So again, that's another trend from when I first started out. It was always perm, and a few contractors to augment. And that started to change somewhat. I suppose when I started, no one really designed anything around the customer. And now the companies that are winning are designing everything around the customer. You know, you hear of great examples like, you know, GIFGAF using the power of the crowd to get iterations and feedback on their products and services. So using the network effect to enhance and build their products and services right in the sweet spot of what the customer wants. So when I designed Sullivan and Stanley, I resigned from my former company, I resigned as a board director. And before I even picked up the phone to sell a product, I spent 3 months interviewing my executive network, just asking about the current state of affairs when looking to get a capability. What do you like? What don't you like? What frustrates you? If you had a magic wand, what would be the ideal solution? And all those kind of things. And then when I launched the business, the first products, Program in a Box, that we were bringing to market, which is, you know, in essence, program management in a box. You can pick and mix stuff and we'll deliver the outcome and all those kind of good things. Didn't land. You know, we tested it first and my network said, we don't really see you as that, Pat. And actually, that's a commodity. And then I got the feedback and then retweaked it and then came back with teams as a service. So SWAT teams of interim experts designed around an outcome or a problem. So a mission-based team to be deployed into an organization to, you know, help them have an innovation capability, help them have an incumbent change capability so they can constantly reinvent themselves, turn around a failing program, align the board, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that concept of designing around your customer and actually having the customer front and center is where we are today, and most of the businesses that are winning have customers in their business, and I think that's what is happening. That's what's winning today, and will do this decade. And there wasn't much of that going on when I first started.
And I'm going to jump back a little bit to something you said at the very start of that. You mentioned how one thing you would say is about how the business landscape in terms of what companies think a transformation entails has changed dramatically. You know. Whereas once upon a time it might have meant X, now it could mean XYZ. Where does a company even begin? And I guess from your perspective, as obviously with Sullivan and Stanley, how do you have that conversation with an organization in terms of how do they work out what sort of transformation they want? You know, I suppose it's nice to look at it on paper and say, you know what, that transformation, we need to get on board with that. But where does one even begin? Where does one even think about planning a roadmap, for example?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Dale. I think there's different ways to open that up, but I'll just go with Phil's right. I think I think because transformation, again, is synonymous with ultra hard, you know, trying to transform a legacy laden organization. So it's an organization that probably on the whole was born in the last century. So they're geared for the Industrial Revolution. They've got hierarchies. They've got an obscene amount of technical debt. You know, they've got vendor lock-in with some of the big SIs and the big sort of software package packages that you would know about and expect. They've got legacy people skills. So people in roles that might have been there for a bit too long, maybe, or haven't been changed or refreshed, and legacy leadership. And on the whole, that causes a lot of ambiguity and confusion. And trying to transform soup to nuts an organization born in the last century and decentralize it to an organization that's, you know, fit for purpose or designed around products and services with business agility in the core is incredibly hard to take from A to B. Especially when some of the traditional consultancies will go in and sell you a playbook that might work in one of your competitors, but when it's actually shoved into your organization will not work because you've got cultural nuances and other nuances that are just, you know, difficult to decipher unless you're in there and you're trying to really get onto the bonnet of what's going on. So invariably what we see is the older ways of consulting have not solved this problem. Because if they had done, we wouldn't be having all these companies that are starting to die or are starting to have a consecutive years of declining revenues and are starting to be under a lot of stress. So to answer your question, what I see working now to actually try to make sense of, let's just put the sort of inverted commas transformation around it, is, you know, take a pause. So what we find is problem number one in organizations is that the board are so under pressure, they've got so much operational drag on their time, they've got EBIT pressures to the board or the wider board, they might have city pressures, they've got issues going on in their business, you know, they've got failures, they've got burning platforms, they've got people issues, and, you know, miscommunications going on, people leaving, people joining, you know, I could go on. And that's actually really hard for that level of executive to actually get some time to think about where should our business go. And then even if they do get an away day, sometimes then they'll have situations where they'll go straight back into a burning platform. So we kind of start off with getting executive groups to stop. And we bring them into our workshop environment that we've got in London Bridge, which we've invested quite a bit of money into to make sure it is as world class as it can be, to be a great experience to immerse yourself in. You know, what does the future look like for your business? Do you have the right strategy? You know, what does the customer of your future look like? You know, we talk a lot about let's do a vivid vision of where would you like your company to be in 3 or 5 years? What does it look like? What does it feel like? Who are your customers? How are your people feeling? You know, how do you constantly iterate in accordance to market conditions? What kind of talent have you got? What is the baggage in the old company that you never want to have again? So it's a kind of concept of reverse engineering the future rather than trying to fix the past. What I find with transformations these days is that a lot of them are trying to fix the past before they can even get to the future. And by then, they've lost 2 or 3 or 4 years and they've actually got no value into the business. They've wasted a lot of money. The organization is completely fatigued with transformation and change. And they don't actually have a muscle in the business of how to change after they've done it because they've been heavily reliant on the management consulting drug. So we kind of try and turn all of that stuff upside down and actually get them to think. So there is a discovery process. We have our IP of how we do it. At the end, there is a point of view, a solution, a roadmap, a way. But it's getting them to come together and go through that process. So they've all got equity in that process and they all feel like it's their idea because invariably it is. And we're adding points of views, we're adding expertise, we're facilitating. And we also find that actually gets the board aligned and the leadership teams aligned. So again, if I think about some of the problems I see in transformation, digital transformation, business transformation, it might not be the right strategy. The board might not be aligned. So we've seen it before where we get sponsored to go in somewhere and then the sponsorship dies, so the business don't follow through on it. But if you get the board aligned with the right strategy for the right transformation, get them ready for change, execute outcomes every 90 days so everyone in the business starts to get confidence that it's moving in the right direction, visualize the work around the organization. Like, long gone are the days where you've got racks and racks of people where no one's talking to each other. So as a recruiter, you can imagine, Dale, I've been into thousands and thousands of businesses, and most people are dead behind the eyes in the middle of the company. They're just coming in, doing their 9 to 5, tapping their keyboard, doing a bit of work, fighting a bit of politics, falling out with someone. I'm elaborating here just to stress a point. It's not all doom and gloom, but on the whole, in my experience, there's a lot of bloated organizations where it is like that. They're too bloated. There's too many people doing too many things. And they're not talking to each other, and they're not collaborating. And we find if you visualize the work at board, leadership level, and bring the work to the people and sort of Kanbanize everything, so you've got a flow of work going through, and there's collaboration and cross-functional teaming that's delivering value to a customer, cross-functional teaming that's delivering value to an internal customer, cross-functional teaming where the execs and the leaders are working with the staff, you really get the whole organization aligned to getting to their intended state. And then there's other things that we're seeing in the market that we do, and not just what we do, but we really advocate. So I don't know about you, Dale, but I have business coaches and I've had life coaches before. So I'm probably the product of coaching. I made a decision when I was 28 to just try and, you know, be someone of growth, be an individual who has a growth mindset. And I don't know all the answers, and I need help. I need to be on the hook sometimes for improvement. I need to be on the hook to sustain some of the gains that I've made. So why don't we have that in companies? So we're starting to see now where we'll put a board coach alongside the board. We have enterprise coaches we put across the leadership teams, you know, Kanban coaches and agile coaches and flow coaches working with the organization. So it's that kind of coaching concept that we see in the individual market coming into the business world, and I'm a massive advocate on it. So it starts to bring in the concept of continuous improvement and continuous reinvention, and knowing that your last 90 days isn't going to be as good as your next 90 days in terms of you as an individual or you as the business, and in terms of how close you are to the customer, and in terms of, you know, the health of the organization.
Join us next time for part 2 of our discussion with Pat as we continue to explore the idea of operational buy-in to a transformation journey and the change management that's required, as well as delving deeper into Sullivan & Stanley and what value proposition it brings to the shifting digital landscape.
Thank you for listening to the Digital Insight Podcast. In association with theinterface.net and cpostrategy.com, the Digital Insight is brought to you by B2E Media Limited. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe, rate and review. And don't forget to check out our podcast archive at www.b2e-media.com/thedigitalinsight.